We are recording in public session.
The time is 3:02 Central Time on January 25th, 2021, and I am convening this video conference meeting of the Assessment Investment Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, the Governor's suspension of certain Open Meeting Act requirements due to the pandemic, and the association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice of this meeting was filed on January 15th and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of the notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. We do have a quorum, as all three members of the committee are in attendance. Also in attendance, we have Shelby and Jackie, and then from the association, Bart, Jarrett, and Topping. And then from TDI, we have John Peters and Patty Otto. Anybody else that I left off?
And Brian Wee, I think.
Yes, Brian Wee from TDI also.
Hi, Brian. Sorry.
No, I joined late.
No worries. We're just getting started. So. I think that concludes the opening part. So item number one, consent agenda, which I think is just the official minutes of the July 2020 meeting. Committee had a chance to look at those.
Yeah, this is Dean. Yeah. I'll move the minutes.
Ted, second.
All right. First and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The minutes are adopted. Item two, cash flow projections. Is that you, Bart?
Yes. Yes, I'll be glad to. This is the customary twice a year we walk through with committee kind of our cash flow projections and for the most significant insolvencies we're addressing at the time. I'll begin with Penn Treaty, Network America, and American Network Insurance Companies, those two Pennsylvania domiciled long-term care carriers. As you know, we funded our and transferred under indemnity reinsurance our obligations to the captive LTC Re that is owned by the Guarantee Associations. Jarrett and I monitor annually the notional account or how the performance of the investments are doing and the experience on the business to see if there are any calls for additional funds from the association. And we're meeting or actually exceeding all expectations there. So there are no needs for any additional cash. We are still incurring some significant expenses to support the NOGA's task force activities. And, but we're holding a little around, I believe it's 10 and a half or almost a little over $11 million in Penn Treaty funds that continue to meet obligations. Lincoln Memorial, at one point, this was a big number. We're now down to, I believe there are 49 policies left with face amounts of about $68,000. We will be funding at some points, not significant numbers there. National States, we have obligations remaining of about $2.2 million. We're paying out a little over $10,000 a month in claims on the average, but we have sufficient funds there. We'll talk about these more in detail and I'll say what those funds are when we get to the potential need for Class B assessments later on the agenda. Executive Life, we're just paying our regular installments each April and those continue to decline. The estimated installment this coming April is going to be about $77,000, although I do think that number is going to be less. They've been trending significantly lower. The experience on the business and the business has fallen off quite a bit. I believe last year was only about $58,000. Northwestern National is almost not worth mentioning. I'm saying we're paying an average of about $1,900 a month. We're really paying about $9,000 a quarter, close to $40,000 a year. For our one policyholder that's still in force with this company. And then I'll mention two more. The newest insolvency, Calanthe Mutual. That one, we just began that insolvency in October, sent out notices in mid-October. So we didn't get our first claims in the door till early November. But we've already paid out roughly about 60 cash surrenders and 8 death claims. So we're incurring more than we expected. And we had some expenses here, but the receivership estate has just closed on January, I believe it was the 13th, Jackie, around in there. I have a note somewhere. Here we go.
I think it was
the 13th. We're going to be getting a distribution of about $249,000 at the estate. So we are actually going to be a little bit positive on funds. So cash flow is not substantial on Calanthe, and we're going to have, I believe, sufficient funds. And Universal Life, we're only paying about $630 a month in claims. We have remaining obligations projected based on reserves about $273,000. So as you can see, for all these, there's not a significant cash flow needs for either expenses or contractual obligation claims. And we will talk about later, but I'll go ahead and foreshadow, we have sufficient funds to meet those cash flow needs. So that's a summary of our cash flow for administration expenses and claims, Jim.
Any questions from any members of the committee? All right. Hearing none, Bart or Jarrett, do you want to start item number 3, a review of associations investments?
So Jarrett, why don't you summarize those investments and tell me you want me to flip to the schedule? You're muted. There you go.
Okay, sorry. Look at page 3-2, and that just goes over our investments that we have in our money market funds, our bank accounts, and our treasuries. You notice some of those balances may be negative. That's just due to a timing issue between when our treasuries mature and then when we buy the next round of treasuries. So those balances will flip back and forth as we go through the quarter. And we have roughly $27.5 million at Morgan Stanley and right at $16 million in treasuries at JP Morgan. And that's all I have on that page if there's any questions.
So the key there, Jarrett, roughly is we try to keep about a $2 million cash operating funds. And the way that goes, we have roughly about $2 million maturing periodically, and we pay that down and we have more funds maturing. So we have these laddered investments, and that's the split you see between the cash and money market funds and the securities. And Jarrett, this next schedule, you'll describe, this is the laddering schedule for investments.
Yes, this is our laddering schedule here. Shows the each treasury that we have and when they mature. And you'll see that we have all the way through June 30th of 2024. And we have roughly $2 million each quarter maturing.
Okay. Any questions for Jarrett on those investments?
Doesn't sound like it. Anything else with respect to investments that you or Jarrett want to mention? Looks like we're pretty much where we were before. Hearing none, let's move to item 4, consideration possible action on assessable premium issues. Mark, that's probably you.
Yes. Primarily, this is going to be a premium issue holdover. The committee asked us to research and provide some a responsive report regarding the 2020 Class A assessment. Now, I'll tell you right now, the 2020 Class A assessment is fully collected, so there is nothing outstanding. We're going to talk about what this issue is, and it's going to impact the 2020 Class A assessment and some future assessments. So we have a course of action we'd like to pursue to remedy the issue. But I'm going to touch on what it is in a high level, and then Jarrett's going to tell you the research that he did with the Department of Insurance to try to identify the scope and the magnitude of what's remaining to be addressed. Okay, so when the association statute was amended in 2019, a couple of things happened. there was a clarification in assessable premium to make sure that certain premiums were excluded from the assessable premium because those products were actually excluded from coverage. And that involves all of Medicare, including the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP premiums. We experienced an issue after the Class A assessment for 2020 was distributed last March, where several of the new HMO members, and HMOs became members of the association on September 1st, 2019 by statute. Several of the HMO members contacted us and said, the statute says that CHIP or Medicare premiums are excluded. Our premiums are CHIP premiums. That's part of Medicare. Why'd you assess us with that? So upon research, we were able to confirm that, yes, these companies did have CHIP premiums. We took it to the committee. The committee made a recommendation to the board. And the board adopted a resolution there were four companies involved, for two of those companies to refund the assessment they had paid and then notify the other two companies that their assessments that were outstanding would not be due. So for those four companies, no assessment. And I believe, Jarrett, the impact of that was less than $9,000 in assessment collection?
A little less than $10,000, about $9,800.
Okay, thank you. But the committee said, these are the four that contacted us, so the four companies we made aware, could there be others that had CHIP premium? And you would think, why didn't we know about these? Well, these were 2018 premiums, the most recently available that could be used to calculate the March 2020 Class A assessment. When the 2018 premiums were reported in the early spring of 2019, HMOs were not yet members. So they did no reporting for the assessable premium. So there were no adjustments for CHIP premiums. So, the only numbers we had were Schedule T, so we used premiums, not knowing that they included CHIP. So since that time, and the committee asked us research and see if there are any other HMOs that potentially had CHIP premiums. And it's a difficult research because of the reporting. Jarrett, could you touch on that? I think you and John Peters worked together on trying to identify these CHIP premiums.
Yeah, so if you recall from the last meeting, we talked about a couple of annual statement exhibits where we got these numbers for these companies, and one of them does report CHIP premium, but only in total, not on a state-by-state basis. So we had no way to determine the CHIP premium for Texas for these companies. So at the last meeting, John Peters recommended that we use a report that he would send to us that does provide CHIP premium for Texas companies, along with other things. And so John sent me that, and that's where we came up with the schedule on page, what is that, 4-3? And if you look on that, you'll see on the right-hand side the premium reporting that we got from NOGA. And once again, this has no CHIP or no identifiable CHIP premium, although we suspect there is. And then on the left-hand side in the column there, TDI reported CHIP 2018 CHIP premium are the numbers that I pulled from the report that John Peters provided. And if you compare those first two columns, the assessable premium that we use and the TDI reported 2018 CHIP premium, they're very, very similar for most of the companies, which leads us to believe that some, if not all, of the premium that we use to assess these companies does contain some CHIP premium. And that's all I got on this, Bart.
So as you see, there are nine additional companies, HMOs, that I'll make it larger. Sorry, it does get kind of small. That had potentially CHIP premiums in 2018, but it needs confirmation. And when we were working on the four other companies, we asked TDI, you know, these are TDI premiums. They're reported to us. We use them. We don't control them. We can't change them. And TDI was good to go with the analyst for these companies and get some confirmation of the chip premiums. We have 13 companies here in total. Nine we have never reached out to about their 2018 chip premiums. We would recommend sending a letter for TDI to use to send maybe through the analyst, maybe directly to the companies, however TDI wants to distribute it, to confirm the amount of their 2018 chip premium. And if we can confirm it, we would recommend refunding any assessment amounts paid by those companies that is attributed, can be attributed to a set of chip premiums being used in the assessable premiums for calculating the assessments. If the numbers match up to what Jarrett has on his schedule for those nine companies, we will be refunding just under $71,000 of Class A assessments that have been paid. So that's one aspect of it. I want to go ahead and mention that we were going to be talking about a 2021 Class A assessment. Well, that's going to be using 2019 premiums. We need to do a confirmation there as well for 2019. And I would like to, if we're going to reach out to these companies and say, are these your 2018 premiums? What were your 2019 premiums? Be sure and pay close attention to reporting your 2020 premiums. And if you've already reported them and adjustments have not been made, please file an amendment. So until the reporting can kind of catch up with statutory changes, we want to send this letter to hopefully clean up the problem to avoid assessment errors and protests. So I'll stop there and see if you have questions.
One more thing I'd like to throw in there. We did do something very similar to this in 2012, where we had some premium cleanup that needed to happen and had TDI send out letters to, I think if it was the whole assessment at that time, the whole assessment base. So it was several hundred letters. This one's only to 13 companies.
No, it was a little different, Jarrett. That involved Medicare supplement, and we were able to identify the Medicare supplement riders. Now, I think it was somewhere between 30 and 50, but it was a larger group of companies. And we were able to clean up the assessable premiums, but it was prior to ever sending out an assessment. Okay, this one's a little bit different. So let's allow the committee to ask us some questions or clarifications.
So for the remaining nine, then, we're going to essentially do the same thing we did for the four companies listed at the bottom there. We're just going to correct the numbers and then refund, because they've already paid the assessment, right? So we're just
refunding. Yes.
And then that'll put us about 80,000 short, and I assume that's just baked into your projections for the Class A that we're going to talk about later in the meeting.
Yes, it is. It is.
Wait, we'll be 80,000 short? I thought it was like 9,800.
Well, the three that we've already adjusted is 9,800. I mean, the four. The nine additional companies have paid in almost $71,000. And if we confirm those chip premiums, we would be refunding those $71,000.
That okay. Is if all the premiums that we assessed on our chip premiums. There's a couple there where the assessable premium is a very large number. If you take a look at number seven, company seven, of the 993 million, we suspect only 23 million is actually chip premium. So that full 40,000 could possibly not be refunded.
Right. And I'm sorry, that's good clarification, Jarrett. That 2020 assessment is the total Class A assessment paid, not the portion of the 2020 assessment payment that is attributed to Class A. So it would be something less than that 71,000.
So it won't be more than that.
No, that's the maximum, kind of the upper end of the issue.
Okay. Ted and Dean, any other questions about that? Seems like that's in accordance with what we've done. Seems equitable. Yeah. Not their fault they didn't report the CHIP premium.
No, I agree. It's the right thing to do. It keeps everyone on the level playing field, even though they didn't identify. They'll end up being treated just as the others were. And Bart, I hear you saying that the top end exposure, to the extent that those are guesstimations, are off a bit in terms of actual CHIP premium, that's not going to cause any problems with regard to our administrative budget, right?
No, not at all. And Ted, you made an interesting comment there. The four companies we had addressed before had approached us and complained. We had an issue. These other nine companies have not approached us. They've not said anything. So this is a proactive measure being considered by the board to be fair and equitable to all the companies.
Yeah, just strange circumstances with bringing HMOs in the middle. So,
I presume, Bart, then going forward, we'll have identified this issue as we just brought these HMOs into the fold. So this won't be an issue going forward.
We hope not. There's two ways we hope to address this. If you support our request to work with TDI to have that letter go out, we can clean up 18 and 19 data and remind them, be cognizant how you report 20 data. At the NEIC, the base reconciliation exhibit is being replaced. Now, the committee hasn't finally approved it yet, but we've seen the form, we've seen the way it handles. It's actually in two parts. Part one reports all premiums. Part two adjust premiums for amounts that should be excluded. And it does it almost verbatim, line by line, and matches right back to statute and has pages and pages of detailed instructions. If that goes through the NEIC at the pace that we've been told they're considering it, it would be implemented this year for 2021 reporting. Okay. So it's definitely not making it for 2020 statements, but should be there and be part of the 2021 annual statement filings. So we're hopeful that that will make the issue go away completely. Until then, we may still have to do a little bit. First, this reminder, and if the reminders aren't heated and the information adjusted, we may have to do one more round of cleanup. But the good thing is, I will say, we're aware of this and we're cognizant and we're tracking these companies before we ever assess. Once we see the assessable premium, we start looking for it.
Are there any communications by TDI to these companies, I guess, in the maybe just one more year where the reporting may not be in place?
Well, I'll say this, John, we're recommending that TDI work with us and send the letter like we did in 2012. There it was just a cleanup data, but here it's going to be cleanup data and then remind companies how to report their data, that the reporting responsibility is on them. And accurate assessments can only be done if they report the data. So I think that's what we're asking TDI to do, and do it all through this letter. Because outside of these 13 companies, I don't know that we have an issue.
Well, I think that all sounds right, Bart. I know you mentioned there was not a resolution in the board packet that the committee could recommend to the board, but I do have a copy in my agenda. I don't know if you have that or should I read it?
I didn't provide it to the committee, Jim. It's only for you, so you may want to read it.
Yeah. So, Ted and Dean, here's a draft resolution that the committee could consider and possibly recommend to the board tomorrow. Pretty short. There's an A and a B. Resolved that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association directs the Executive Director to, and then A, send a letter to the nine member companies that have been identified to confirm the amounts of their premiums received for the CHIP program were included in the premiums used to calculate the 2020 Class A assessment. And then B, if the premiums are confirmed, refund any amounts paid by these companies in the 2020 Class A assessment.
Jim, if I could, after discussion, after I sent you that information this morning, a discussion with both Jackie and Jarrett, in the item A, where you had said, I think you said the exec director to send a letter, we'd like to have that be considered to work with the Texas Department of Insurance to send a letter, because we think it would be more appropriate for the letter to come from the Department of Insurance, because that authority to adjust premiums and then provide premium to the association lies with the Department of Insurance.
I think companies will pay closer attention to if it comes from TEI, but
No insult taken.
Well, I think that's a friendly amendment. I don't have any issue with that at all. It sounds like a good idea.
And so I'm just, based on what you read, I don't know if I heard it exactly right, but the second, the B, I think you said based on any premium, should it say based on CHIP premium? You said any amounts paid versus any amounts paid associated with CHIP premium.
I think that's a good clarification.
It is.
Obviously what's intended, but yeah, that's correct. It'd be based on the CHIP.
Yeah, I don't want misunderstanding and thinking they're getting a full refund.
Right. No, correct. It's good clarification.
Got it.
All right. Now with those two amendments, is the committee comfortable with that recommendation? All right.
I'd move the recommendation. Okay.
Sounds good. If you need a second.
All right. Second by Ted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The committee passes the recommendation, Bart.
Thank you. I will clean up that resolution for the amendments that you've done and send it to the committee by email before the board meeting tomorrow so you can see it. Make sure I've captured your resolution accurately.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Anything else there with item four we need to talk about?
No, I think that's complete.
All right. Item number five, consideration and possible action on a Class A assessment for 2021.
Okay, Jim, should I continue?
Yeah, please. Go ahead, Bart.
This committee very appropriately, I believe, made the decision a year ago that it would discontinue the approach the association had taken on Class A assessments, forecasting 2 to 3 years needs of administrative expenses and doing a Class A assessment. First, it had some issues with member companies not knowing when or if a Class A assessment was going to be levied, and also ended up with shortfalls or excess. And so the accuracy of those estimates were not the best, because Class A expenses can go up and down as new events transpire. So the committee recommended that we move to a process to annually assess for Class A assessments by looking at the balance of our administrative expense fund at the end of the year, the administrative expenses in the operating budget for the coming year that had just been developed, and then consider the appropriate amount to levy as a Class A assessment for that year's operating expenses. So with that approach in mind, if you'll look on the bottom of 5.1, you will see a pro forma cash flow table that Jarrett developed. And you have to do a little bit of adjustment here, because we close out the financials as of November 30th for the January meeting. So the operating expense balance shown here of 680,581 is November 30th, not year end. So you've got to think that's going to come down anywhere from maybe $200,000 or so. I'd have to look and see at what bills and expenses we're hitting when, but estimate 200,000. So let's say about 450 would be available in the fund at year end. Then we look at the operating expenses in the projected 2021 operating budget, and rent, employee benefits, and the other overhead, I'll call them office expenses. We have projected expenses there of 1.6 million. So deducting that, it looks like we can have a shortfall between a million to a million two with that adjustment for the December expenses. I will recommend that we try to hold the line as tight as possible on budgeting and assessing and not build up an excess. If we run a little short toward the end of the year, we have other funds we can internally borrow from and repay the expense fund after assessing. So Jared and I have talked about this, and we're recommending an even $1 million Class A assessment in March 2021 to cover our 2021 Class A expenses.
Bart, forgive me if you covered this and I didn't pick it up. So these expenses for 2021 anticipate whatever changes you may be considering as a result of stay at home, COVID, change in circumstance, right?
Yes. Even office lease change expenses there, all of that, because the numbers come directly out of our forecasted budget for 2021. Okay. So it's the most accurate we have.
And then we're comfortable if that, if it is a million two rather than a million, that, don't have any concerns. We can cover that shortfall if necessary at year end before we have the next class A.
Yeah, we have processes in place to borrow from excess funds in the insolvency accounts and repay them. It's all part of the established intercompany. We also call it inter-account borrowing that the association has utilized for many years. And I'll tell you, that's reviewed and tested by the auditors, and they think it's a very appropriate process.
Well, I'm comfortable with 1 million.
Okay. Is that a motion, Tim?
Sure.
This is Dean. I'll second.
All right. We have a first and a second resolution on page 5-2 with a $1 million Class A. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the resolution recommendation passes, Bart.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I think that brings us to item number 6. I think this will be short based on our prior conversation, but consideration of a Class B assessment for 2021.
Okay. The only prefatory comment I'll make is, you know, we always try to combine if we're going to do a Class A assessment with a credit refund. So we scrub our insolvencies very hard to see where do we need funds, where do we already have funds? And if we have funds, can they be refunded as a credit to pay part of the assessments being requested from the member companies? So we have the schedule, we call it the cash available needs schedule. And so here is the list of insolvencies that we still have on our active list. Now, some of these we will recommend trimming, but not at this time. We've got a few things left to clean up on them. But what this schedule does, it presents the net position of each insolvency. And we take our cash and cash equivalents and all of our investments for each insolvency. We look at any other receivables, assets that not yet collected or have not yet somehow been assigned to us or are not liquid. Then our payables, if we have expenses, if we have intercompany or inter-account loans to repay, and any contractual obligations. You have to remember, some of these are due and some of these are not due. on several of these companies. These are reserves for future obligations. They're not due yet. So don't see this net position as being a cash flow need currently. So when some of these, if you look at them, have a negative balance, that may be a negative balance, but it's not going to be negative for several years yet. So let's look at some of the let's look at negatives first. I'll make this a little bit larger, make it easier to see. There we go. Calanthe Mutual, $902,000. I say right now we're a little bit negative, but we're about to get a distribution from the estate. We don't even have that in the receivables. When we prepared this schedule, we didn't have the closing application from the receiver yet, but we're about to get $249,000. This $877,000 of contractual obligations negative, it's the reserve for the approximately 2,700 life insurance policies that are active. Now, we've seen 8 death claims, and I mentioned about 60 surrenders, but some of that's kind of shock activity, just went into liquidation. So the policyholders say, I better get my money. That's going to calm down. The receiver or the SDR had been handling this company for a couple of years, was seeing 8 to 10 claims a month. So we think that's going to calm down. These reserves are going to go years into the future. So although it's negative, we don't see a need for funds today. We'll revisit this next year. Let's move on down. You see Northwestern National, $252,000 negative. We have one policyholder. And I told you we see about $9,000 a quarter, around $40,000 a year in claims for him. That $252,000 negative is kind of, it's based on my estimate of what our remaining exposure is under his policy. So that is all not due now. And for the same reason as Calanthe, we'd like to postpone consideration of any type of assessment for that company until next year. The other one, Security General, that's one that's been out there for a long time. That balance is there. And we researched it, 2006 insolvency. We don't know why this company was never assessed. We just could never find it. And now the data to assess it is going to be a challenge. So we are beginning to develop a resolution strategy of how we can address this. And we would like to bring that to you as kind of a package. When we recommend the next Class B assessment, we're going to have a resolution strategy for Security General. Plus, there's another several other companies on this list that have small balances that we think we can clean up and trim this list further. Okay. The other significant one there is SHIP. You see that's negative. We can't assess that yet. Southland National, Time Insurance Company. These are rehabilitations we're tracking and monitoring. So we're incurring expenses, but we can't assess for them. And we're not activated. Now, on the positive side, we have a significant amount of money developing on some insolvencies, specifically Lincoln Memorial. You see that there, and we're expecting some more funds soon. There was a subsidiary of this company, a New York-based medical malpractice company that was in liquidation. Well, they have a hearing coming up first week of February and may close the estate, and the receiver in Texas could get another $14 million. We're going to get a chunk of that. We think somewhere between $2 to $3 million. And Jackie will report in executive session tomorrow where we are on our asset recovery litigation and the oral arguments in the Eighth Circuit on our second appeal. So it appears that resolution may be in the future to wrap up everything on Lincoln Memorial. We're hopeful within the next year. So we'd rather wait and do it all at once. This is going to be a substantial undertaking, because a lot of the premium tax credits for the last assessment on Lincoln Memorial have all been taken. So Jim, I'll kind of cut it short and say, we don't see an assessment obligation need right now. And without that need, we would recommend waiting on a credit refund. But we do think both of those are going to be in play, not in July, but next January. So a little bit of foreshadowing for the committee. And I'll take any questions you might have on the schedule or that recommendation.
I think I understand the recommendation, Bart. Ted or Dean, any questions for Bart?
No, I'm good.
I think I'm good. Just out of curiosity, so I know we're restricted with respect to our investments. How do we determine for purposes of applying interest credited in our investments to these liabilities? Is it a floating rate or a certain rate we just determine for ourselves, or is it the aggregate of all the strips that we hold? How do we credit ourselves for anticipated interest?
So, Jarrett, you allocate that interest each month. So you want to respond?
Yeah. So it's really just based on since we only invest in U.S. Treasuries, all we really have is the Treasury interest that we receive. And so it's allocated based on the amount of Treasury holdings for each particular estate.
So these numbers are reflected once the interest is earned on a monthly basis?
Correct.
I got you.
And so that column there, the total receivables and other assets, about half of that number is accrued interest for each individual estate.
Right. So you answered my question. I just wanted to make sure that we're not overly reliant upon, we all know we're suffering through a low interest rate in economy, and it may persist for some time. And I wanted to make sure that we weren't crediting or anticipating earnings interest that we weren't going to be able to realize in the long term.
No, it's actual interest earned.
Actual earnings. Good question. Thank you, Ted. Anything else, Jim?
I don't think. Doesn't seem like a Class B is in the works until next year. So, item 7, executive session. Bart, is there anything here that we need to discuss in executive session?
I'm not aware of anything. I'll ask counsel of anything they need to provide to the committee.
Nothing from me, Bart.
Nothing from me, Shelby.
Okay, thank you, Shelby. There you go, Jim.
Okay. Moving on to item 8, I guess. That would also be not applicable, since that's a discussion of items that we talked about in executive session. So I guess that moves us ahead to item 9, consideration and possible action regarding the committee's 2021 calendar activities.
So the calendar is just a forecast. And I try to put the things on here I know you're going to be dealing with and when you're going to be dealing with them. And you'll see the reference activity number out here, item 36, item 54, because this comes from a master calendar where I put all the activities for the entire board, the association, and all the committees. So then I pick out the ones applicable to this committee and put over on your calendar. So you can see you may only have 8 or 10 items on your list, but there are about 60 across the entire association's calendar for the year. And I do adjust these as we pick up additional activities or schedule meetings or change dates. I do a quarterly update of the calendar. Just let you know why that calendar is there and how we use it. And we have your next meeting tentatively scheduled on the Monday, July 19th, 2021.
All right, put that on my calendar, Bart.
I'll double check that's a Monday because sometimes I get the days.
That's right, Bart, and just to get advance, it's likely to change on my end, but right now I have a conflict. The COVID vacation from last summer, they got postponed to the Christmas vacation. They got further postponed, is now set for that week this summer. But based on our new president's announcements yesterday, it may get canceled as well. But if it stays as scheduled, I'll be on a boat in the middle of the Baltic on this day. I may not be able to make it.
Well, if it stays on your calendar, just let us know. and if we're continue to be in a COVID environment, the necessity for the committees to meet the day before the board meeting and at these times, we have a lot more flexibility moving to a different week prior to the meeting.
Okay. I'll keep you posted on my end. I'll be back the 22nd based on current schedule.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. I think that's it then, Bart. Is that right?
I have nothing else today, Jim.
Ted or Dean, anything else from either of you?
No. Just to thank you to staff and everyone. Appreciate the information.
All right. Well, I'll read the closing language here. The time is 3:47 Central Time on January 25th, 2021. And this meeting of the Assessment Investment Committee of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association is hereby adjourned.